Hello, Hyrule. Welcome back to the premier Legend of Zelda Travelogue podcast. We are your tour guides. My name is Pete.
And my name is Chris.
Hey, we're back.
We're back. Yeah, I feel like it probably doesn't come through, but sometimes we record these in batches and then we just take a few weeks before recording. And I feel like my mind wipes completely.
I feel like we haven't recorded in like a month.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how it goes when you release an episode every other week.
So weird.
To be clear, there's a lot of editing that goes on in between those recording sessions. It's not like we're just
you got to get a backlog sometimes, especially when you know ahead of time that, like, if you know like a stretch of time coming up is going to be just a bog of events, just constant stuff going on. I know so many people with birthdays in June,
present company included,
Chris.
Yeah.
Says a little bit of something about y'all's parents, but I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, no, it's the early days of it's been the early days of summer, and Pete's been enjoying many different things on the weekends, and I've been gardening with Katie a good amount. I mean, that's got a lot going on in the backyard right now, which has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, I mean, y'all been doing some pretty cool stuff back I mean, you know, it's gardening. It's not like you're doing, you know, topiaries or whatever, but it's some pretty good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of some pretty good stuff, I have a recap here of where we're at with the Minish Cap.
Go for it.
So, the evil Vati has cursed Hyrule, turning its princess into stone and snatching the body of the king in an effort to find the golden light source of limitless power. We find ourselves working with the Picori, including Ezlo, our hat-shaped bird companion.
Is there a reason we go back to the beginning every time we do it?
You know, every episode could be someone's first episode.
I
like to acknowledge
fair.
That at least sometimes.
No, I hear you.
In the last episode, we skated our way through the Temple of Droplets to obtain the water element and learn about the ability to clone ourselves into a little Link trio. We're then approached by the ghost of Gustav, who tells us the path forward will become clear if we stand before him.
That is actually something we can't do just yet, Chris. We talked about this in the previous episode, where with the water element, we can now head to the Elemental Sanctuary to become three boys. It's around this point you have to go there first before you head to our next location.
Yeah.
I only bring this up again this episode because it's around this point in the game where you have to sneak in.
I was wondering if we were going to mention this. I didn't know if we just skated right by it. But yeah, this is a whole sneaking section to get through the front gates, I guess, of Hyrule Castle.
You can make it... The makeup of the palace is a little like odd because you can actually get over the moat or the drawbridge or whatever into Hyrule Castle proper, like the grounds, but you're just in like a courtyard when you first walk in, and there's like hedge mazes to the left and right. The one to the left you're gonna have to sneak through, which has like patrol guards going up and down, which because I guess Vati told them to.
So remember a few episodes ago, Vati took the body of the king and said everyone look for the light source, and I think he also said something about looking out for Link, but if he didn't, it's implied.
And they just do. Which, hey, that's...
I mean, it's the most competent these guards have ever been yet, and let's be clear, it's barely competent.
And it's only against us, though, is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, I don't know, this sneaking segment was very reminiscent of like Ocarina of Time to me.
A little Ocarina of Time, a little Majora's Mask, a little, you know, there's different places where you have to sneak through a hedge maze.
But I mean, essentially, it's the case that like if you go into the field of view of any of these guards, you have to restart the section over. It's like a brief snippet of the section.
Which is not too bad. You don't have to worry about making noise, for example. This isn't Splinter Cell.
Right.
Like, you can just roll around screaming and huffing and like shooting sword lasers and they won't hear any of that. But if you're like close enough in their view, then they'll spot you. You could actually be in their view but far away and they won't see you just yet.
Yeah, there's a little understood pathing in front of, like directly in front of their face. I mean, to the side a little bit, they'll also see. But yeah, it's not too tough, but it's also just like, I don't know. I've got a big gripe with stealth sections in games that just reset you back to a position. It's just not fun. It's just like, I don't know. What are you doing, really?
What would you have done, though? Like,
have them come at you like the cuckoos in...
So they just attack you relentlessly till you leave the map?
Yeah, like a swarm of them. Have them come at you, and then you have to maybe evade them and rush into the palace or something.
I don't know if that would, like, if those visuals would be something that Papa Nintendo would be happy about. Seeing, like, a bunch of grown adults who are not brainwashed or anything just attacking a child.
That's what happens throughout the rest of the game, kind of. Okay, maybe it's monsters.
Yeah, it's monsters. There's no human adults actually attacking you.
Well, what if the real monsters are the human adults the whole time?
Well, I mean, I was kind of leaning toward an ACAB thing here, but, you know, we can leave that on the cutting room floor. We'll see.
Yes, but, I mean, once we get that third link ability, we are certified ghost hunters at this point.
Are we?
Absolutely. The ghost of Gustav told us we gotta find him, right? So,
well, I don't know if that gives us any sort of credentials for busting ghosts, Chris.
We are certified ghostbusters at this point. I don't know if anything in life really gives you the credentials to do that.
I think you at least have to bust one ghost, which in this game we have not done.
Well, let's see if we do it by the end of this episode, because we're heading to the Royal Valley.
Spooky.
Spooky.
They have some very appropriately, like, Halloween store vibe music playing for the Royal Valley, but there's very little actual music to it. Do you remember this, Chris?
I remember the Royal Crypts music, because it's specifically calling back to something else. I don't remember the Royal Valley.
Okay, so the Royal Valley is the portion driving up until the graveyard. Like, also, I think it does actually include the graveyard itself.
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, the music here is, like, very spooky, very, like, N64 era, like, Luigi's Mansion, maybe, era spooky music. But the majority of the track is just, like, sound clips of owls and howling wolves.
Oh, interesting. I mean, we're gonna see some of those owls, I guess, shortly.
Yeah. I don't think I would call those owls, Chris. Like, not at all.
I guess, yeah, you're 100% right. They're not owls at all. Very clearly. Yeah, I don't know. Let's describe the vibe of... I mean, you've kind of already started, right? It's the haunted section of the game.
Spooky woods.
Spooky woods. It's very purple.
You know, really quick, I'm going to add something in. I'm glad that you mentioned that it's very purple vibes here, because I found out something yesterday. Ellie is starting to catch up on the podcast, and she got to the part where we're talking about Vati, where, like, purple is evil or something. Like, how, like, oh, you ever notice, like, the bad guys in Zelda are purple and whatever?
Yeah.
And Ellie explained to me that purple is just kind of code for evil in Japan.
Really?
Yeah. Like, in, like, different places have different, attach different meanings to color and such. And for purple, that is, like, evil.
Interesting. I mean, that is definitely consistent throughout the Zelda series to a large extent, even playing through Breath of the Wild again now. Malice is very purple.
Extremely purple.
But yeah, that's good to know.
But in any case, spooky woods. Spooky Halloween store music. You got some ghosts that'll float around and they'll wrap you up in their tails and lick you like an ice cream cone.
Mm-hmm.
These are, by the way, Chris, Geenies.
Geenies.
I'm jumping prematurely into the monster list.
I know, and I am scrambling. That's okay. Yeah, Geenies, they kind of act like Re-Deads in the N64 games, right?
A little bit. Like,
they
different...
grab you and they hug you and they leech your life.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's kind of what they're doing. Although I don't see a lot of leeching happening. They're just licking you. Like, they just lick you like Ghastly, you know?
Sorry, I pronounce lick oddly. They're leeking you.
Wow, I don't like that at all. But imagine for a second, Chris, that you are a genie, that you are a little floating ghost with, like, you know, just one eyeball floating around looking for sources of light. Because apparently in their figurine description, it says, like, they're attracted to light.
Mm-hmm.
So just imagine, just get into the mindset.
Yes.
Are you here with me?
Yes.
You're in genie mindset?
I'm in genie mindset.
Okay. Hey, Chris, what do Link and Ezlo taste like?
You got me. I didn't think I could be 100% caught off guard with one of these dumb segments. Not since the Skyward Sword season. I feel like I've learned kind of how you lead into this. But when you said, "Hey, Chris," there, my heart froze. A chill went through all of my bones.
And therein, Chris, I have perfectly recreated what it feels like to be licked by a genie. There you go.
So, okay. So, yeah, that's what it would feel like for Link and Ezlo. But I guess what you're asking is what it would taste like for the genie?
Yeah, like, if you're... Because, like, what are they doing? They're absorbing life energy through their, like, ghost tongue?
I mean, let's be clear. And it's not the fun answer, but the answer is sweat.
Oh.
I mean, Link has now gotten through 3 dungeons. It's by far the most stressful week of this kid's life up to this point. His dear friend is frozen solid and stone, and he's probably also scared by the general area he's in. He's probably sweating bullets, just pure perspiration. And when we enter this area, we have a quote from Ezlo saying, "What, you're not scared? Well, good, neither am I."
So what, fear sweat?
You know that Ezlo is definitely shaken in his little hat boots.
So hang on a second. So, because there's the reason I included Ezlo here, is that the genie is absorbing, like, your spirit energy.
Do you mean your heart?
Yeah, your hearts. You know, okay. if it's sucking up your life force, like, I imagine they're not getting a lot of benefit from the actual grit and grime that you've collected in your journey, right?
I mean, I've thought about this too, because I also immediately assumed it was sucking up your light force. But I mean, it could just be damaging Link's psyche.
Oh, like psychic damage.
Yeah, it could be that Cthulhu effect that is... effect. Like, we have nothing that's telling us that the genie is getting stronger with every lick.
Well, yeah, I guess that makes sense. It's kind of an abstract flavor that we're going for here, you know what I mean?
Oh, actually, the figurine does say they may suck your life away.
Yeah, buddy.
But again, nothing saying that they're getting stronger, just that you're getting weaker.
Oh, I'm not questioning that at all. I'm just questioning what life force tastes like.
You're kind of doing a 2-for-1 here now, huh?
No, that was the one. That was my original intent.
I don't know.
You're the one who started talking about licking up sweat.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I think my sweat answer is as good as I'm going to get. What do you think it tastes like?
I'm going to say it is minty.
Of course, it's minty.
Why not?
Oh, it's this flavor of Gatorade. Oh, it's this flavor of Mountain Dew. My answers are real, they're honest, and they also involve the Elder Gods sometimes.
I'm going to say I think my answers are a little more fun.
I'm not going to argue that.
In any case, that is the first monster we see in the Royal Valley. The second monster, which is also new, is called a Takuri.
Yeah.
Or Takuri, considering there's 2 Ks in there. These are just a recolor of crows from elsewhere in the game. The difference between Takuri and crows is that Takuri will steal rupees from you if they, you know, collide.
Yeah. Looking at the actual, like, design on the Takuri, it reminded me of those Gweis from Skyward Sword, the birds that would poop on Link.
Right,
it looks very similar to those. But I mean, it also kind of just looks like basic angry bird.
I can see it knocking down some, what are they, like log houses that the pigs live in? I never played Angry Birds.
I didn't mean the IP Angry Birds. I meant a bird whose vibe is anger. They're kind of like crows. They're crows.
They're like brown red crows. Although, funny little detail, the Japanese name, which is Hitakuri, actually just means purse snatcher, which I think is pretty appropriate.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But these guys are also in Majora's Mask.
They are, actually, now that you mention it. Yeah. Like, you can run into them out in Termina Field.
And they have a much more creative, they look like Nickelodeon characters. In Majora's Mask.
Everything in Termina looks a little bit off. Like, it's once we get to the choo-choo, I'll be sure to bring that up again.
All right, well, that covers the new creatures, basically, in this area. We've got one more when we get a little further, but let's cross that bridge when we get there.
Yeah.
So, almost immediately in the Royal Valley, there is a bombable cave wall with the most haunted of haunted things in the Minish Cap. A fairy fountain.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. I had these notes saved for like another episode. I wasn't sure where to put them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it happens like right before the next thing in here. So I figured here's as good of a place as any. This is the third Adventurer's Spring. It's a green fairy this time with kind of like Princess Leia hair buns.
Is the dragonfly? This is the dragonfly fairy?
I keep forgetting that they're modeled after insects in any way. So I say dumb things like Princess Leia hair. But yes, you're probably right about that. She asks us to tell her about our adventure so far, and she has a series of questions that are true or false.
Mm-hmm.
The ones I have noted down are if the first element we found was the fire element, it wasn't. If our grandfather's name is Smee, it isn't.
Nope.
If the blabber nut gives us the ability to understand the Minish.
Trick question.
It's not. We know the jabber nut. And if the robe of the current king of Hyrule Daltis is white, and it's not, it's red.
I find it very strange. Here's the thing. Like, I understand, like, you want to test this kid's knowledge or something in order to gauge his wisdom and give him, like, a better quiver for his bow or something. You know, gamey-wamey in that regard. But if you get any questions wrong, Chris, she calls you a liar. She'll accuse you of lying, not just being wrong.
She calls you a liar and steals every one of your arrows.
Oh, well, that seems reasonable.
It's like part of Demise's curse is that every interaction that every Link ever will have with another person is them giving him a trial of some sort.
I guess.
It's just everywhere. It's just nonstop.
Everybody wants something from you.
But if we do answer honestly and get all the questions right, you kind of implied this a second ago, we get a large quiver.
Could you imagine for a second? Because like there's other games where you can like do mini games to get larger quivers and such. Usually it's like an archery challenge. Could you imagine, like, I don't know, Ocarina of Time, you go to the archery challenge place or hut, I don't know, in Castletown, and if you fail one time, the guy behind the desk is like, you don't deserve this, and he just takes your quiver away, or, you know, dumps all your arrows out of your current quiver.
Yeah, pretty unreasonable. Like, I wonder if Link, like, signed a contract saying, like, okay, if I get it, you give me a quiver. If you get it, you have the rights to all of my, you know, equipment here.
We could actually apply this logic to a bomb bag, right? Like, if you don't know how to handle a bomb and someone sees you doing that, they might actually just take all your bombs away in a real situation.
For what it's worth, you're actually making me come around on this and think that these people are in the right to be stealing.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're misfiring an arrow. You're being tested on what you potentially could have played 3 weeks ago, like your save file. Could have been 10 years ago that you did these things.
And you're not just wrong, you are lying.
Yeah.
King Daltis does not wear white. How dare you?
Give me all your arrows. Anyway, so yeah, we get the large quiver, which I really can't imagine why you would need more than 15 arrows at any given time, but sure, you can get up to 99.
Shooting a bow and arrow in this game is kind of slow, even with the upgrade you get later.
Yeah, you really only do it when you need to do it, like when there are specific objects in the way that require that.
Right.
It's not like a primary weapon. Like, that will always be your sword, I think, in this game.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work like in the N64 games where shooting your arrows basically like a gun.
Yeah.
It just instantaneously hits in a solid straight line with no arc.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, once we're done with this, we continue down the red pathing of the Royal Valley into this game's version of the Lost Woods.
Really interesting that they plant this spot here, right?
In the haunted area?
Yeah. I don't necessarily believe that this is supposed to be the same area, but like, if you think about the positioning of Hyrule Castle and Hyrule Town and like the way this place works, especially considering that like you go in here and it's just permadarkness no matter what time of day it is.
I don't know. It doesn't really correlate to any of the other games that are coming to mind for me, right? Like, it's too far from the N64 games. Thinking back to Breath of the Wild, it's kind of like right behind the castle.
Yeah, the Lost Woods are north of Hyrule Castle.
Right.
And Hyrule Castle is like, destroyed and rebuilt several times throughout history. So like, it's not beyond the pale that, you know, this is the Lost Woods. And like, every time you encounter a woods that has this, you know, maze-like situation, that is the Lost Woods.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I have no real reason to believe that it is. Like, I don't see real a lot of evidence apart from, like, a game mechanic, and that doesn't mean a lot. But there is one other detail.
Go ahead.
In here, it is just constantly dark.
It is.
Despite the trees being dead and having having no foliage, it is permanently dark in here. You can use a lantern to see a little bit, but that's about it.
Right, right. It's pretty useless to get here. Oh, well, I don't think you can get here even before you have the lantern.
Well, Chris, the reason I bring this up, do you remember Thyflo Ruins in Breath of the Wild? You're playing Breath of the Wild right now, right?
Yeah, I don't.
Thyflo Ruins is a place in the northern woods of Hyrule, around the same area as the Lost Woods.
Okay.
Which is permanently cast in darkness.
Okay.
And what it's called, it is the Shrouded Shrine Quest.
Oh.
Like, this is how you uncover the Shrine of the Air. You actually have to follow directions through this darkness in order to find the shrine.
Oh, is it the same kind of general conceit in regards to finding your way?
Not in the sense that, like, the map will reload for you. I mean, the Lost Woods and this area are two different areas within the woods, if I recall correctly.
Right, right, right. I'm looking at the Thyflo Ruins now, and I absolutely do remember this, yeah.
So it's not, like, impossible, right? That this is, like, the same area?
It could be. Yeah, I like that theory. And I actually want to also touch on something you kind of touched upon a second ago. I love the idea that the Lost Woods itself could kind of reappear anywhere in Hyrule.
Ooh. Okay.
Like, it could move around, and it's because it has some mystical power to it. The same thing that does something, like, completely misplaces someone.
I hadn't thought of it that way. Like, it's some kind of, like, sapient or sentient, like, woodland?
To some extent. Why stop at the ability to move Link from place to place? Why not be able to move itself from place to place?
I guess the only thing that I'm lacking is, like, evidence. You know what I mean? The only reason that I'm not, like, putting my foot down hard on, like, this woods being the same as all the other Lost Woods is because I just don't have the evidence for it. I just think it'd be interesting.
Oh, for sure. There is no evidence other than the fact that throughout the games, it's just in different locations. It's not always in one set location,
right,
as it pertains to the castle. So, I don't know. But, yeah. So, we're in this game's Lost Woods, and the puzzle mechanic of the Lost Woods this time is that there are these signs in each quadrant.
Yeah, directional sign that tells you go left, go right, etc. But the majority of them are just like, hey, remember that turn you took like three turns ago? Do that one again.
Yeah. I mean, Pete, how do you feel about the Lost Woods in this game generally?
I think they're fine. I don't think they're like especially interesting. They're only here for like a minute.
Yeah.
And like if you have short-term memory issues as far as like remembering the order of turns you took, then like just write it down. You're fine.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the general gist of literally a sign saying left, up, right, you know, especially in the early few rooms is kind of underwhelming. It's not the most creative. It is kind of interesting that in the latter half, you get what was the first direction you took or what was the direction you took two rooms ago.
Well,
but generally speaking, it's not the most creative or interesting Lost Woods we've ever had.
Well, when you think about the person who possibly put these signs up, it kind of makes sense.
Who do you think that is?
I think it was Dompei. So he can get home.
That makes sense. But I mean, what do you think Dompei was thinking? Like, why do two turns ago or three turns ago? Like, why not be direct the whole way?
I think he was making all the signs at once and he has a bad memory.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, if it's going to be some corporeal being, it's got to be Dompei, I guess.
It's literally a wooden sign that someone had to nail into the ground.
No, you know what? I don't think it was Dompei.
You don't?
Where we're going, the other side of the Lost Woods is the Royal Cemetery, right?
Yeah.
So the people traversing through these woods would be people looking to bury royalty to some extent.
Sure.
And who have we met that work for the royal family? The Hyrule Guards. And who have we met that aren't the most competent bunch episode after episode and don't necessarily do things the most logical or convenient ways? The Hyrule Guard. I think the Hyrule Guard wrote these signs.
You think so?
I mean, no, but yeah, why not?
It's possible. Although, like, if you go further in, follow this line of thought, like, they protected the place to keep people out.
True. Fair enough. So they made it a little bit difficult. Listen, that theory falls apart a little bit when you realize they didn't just lie completely. They could have lied if they wanted to keep people out.
Actually, that's fair. They could have said like, yeah, just go left. And every sign just says left and you leave the valley every time.
Oh, that would be so, that would be infuriating. if it could be one of three that it doesn't say of this on the sign. Oh, that would be a slog. Okay, so we get through these woods and we're suddenly in a more gated area with this brick pathing, and our visibility is generally more obscured. At this point, we could be using the lantern to see a bit more, but I mean, you can see kind of enough. I mean, it's up to you.
Wait, really? You can see like well enough without the lantern?
I mean, you don't see a lot. It's a tiny little circle around you. You should be using that lantern here.
Yeah, for sure.
But something I noticed, like I mentioned, this is a gated area. Did you catch this? I'm sending you a Discord picture. Did you catch this little design in the gates?
Yeah, little Triforce pieces in the fence.
Yeah, yeah. Other than that, though, there are some crows and ghosts.
Takuri, Chris.
Sorry, Takuri. Takuri?
Takuri.
Takuri. But essentially, the end goal here is this house that we come across. Do you remember what this house looks like?
It's just like a little shack, right?
Let me show you, because I think this might explain why the Lost Woods might not be here for too much longer after the Minish Cap.
Okay.
Let me show you the absolutely wild design of this house.
Whoa.
This house in the middle of the woods has a bunch of candles atop it.
Oh no, Chris.
I think the owner of this home may have inadvertently burnt down the Lost Woods at some point after this game.
I can understand maybe why you would want to have a bunch of like flames or torches around your house when you're in like a realm of perpetual darkness.
Sure. Get some lanterns. Lanterns exist.
Yeah, there's a lot of dry wood out here.
Let's explain, I guess, to our listeners the hut that we're looking at. Do you want to give it a shot?
Yeah. So from the bottom up, it looks like an ordinary house that you might see in Hyrule Town.
Cool purple door frame.
Yeah, it's not bad. But when you get up to the roof, it looks like it's like mossy or like covered in mold, or like it looks raggedy and maybe wet or damp.
It looks dampy, yeah.
Yeah, dampy. You can see on the top at several, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, like maybe 10 different torches or candles that are just hanging out on the roof at different spots.
Again, we're like right by the woods. A good gust of wind, if it doesn't blow all of these out, could light all of the Lost Woods on fire.
Oh, that's not good. Especially, like, you hit summer, and, like, there's a dry heat going on, and you'll one little breeze, one little cinder, the whole woods is going up.
Absolutely. Anyway, speaking of Dampy, we have our first instance here of Dompei.
Oh, I was wondering where you're going with Dampy. For our first ever Dompei, that's pretty cool.
That's very cool. I love Dompei. We tell him we were brought here by the ghost of a king, and he immediately trusts us and gives us the graveyard key. Normal stuff. You either trust the boy or you want to put him through a trial.
I mean, last episode we talked about how people trust him to sell a house. So I guess he's got like the most trustworthy face on earth.
I guess so. He has a line of dialogue that says, "That'd be the ancient king of Hyrule who rests here. I've seen him myself." So you get this Dompei who seems like he might be tortured by ghosts at night, or by the sight of ghosts at night. Or maybe he's not tortured by it. Maybe he's just, it's a regular occurrence. And at this point, I have a note saying, the Zelda community does not talk about Dompei nearly enough. I think the Zelda community fixates on Tingle, but we've got a golden boy right here with Dompei. What a curious little fellow.
There's a lot to unpack with Dompei, that's for sure. And like each iteration just gets like a little bit weird in a different direction.
Yeah, I love him. He's such a cool character design, an interesting character design. And
I mean, so he's, well, yeah, Chris, hang on. Let's not embellish too hard here. He's Igor.
He's Igor to
he's
some
just,
extent.
He's just Igor in character design. And that's okay.
That's okay.
That's fine. I mean, but we don't need to, like, you know, super compliment the character design. It's Igor.
So one thing I do like is that they don't take the expected route with a character design like this and make it like evil or a villain. Like, Dompei's just a nice dude.
More or less. He's kind of a recluse, but that's really as bad as it gets.
Yeah. And hey, as a recluse, I can appreciate that. There's no Dompei in Skyward Sword, though, right? Like, the graveyard hanger-outer in that is Betro. I wouldn't say that's a parallel.
Ooh, what if Dompei is like a descendant of Betro? His head's the right shape.
I don't know about that. Maybe. I don't know. Then you're implying that there might be some monster in Dompei, and I just think Dompei looks a little different.
That's valid. That's fair. I you know, I'm thinking, like, because Betro is human at the end, so, like, who's to say?
That's true. That's true. So it's just taking some of the physical appearance from Betro. Totally human. As Betro is at the end,
yeah.
But just taking some of the physical appearance over the generations. Okay, I can kind of make that connection. I'm kind of into that.
To just, and then, you know, henceforth just forever lives in graveyards.
So Dompei gives us a graveyard key, and we approach the gate outside of Dompei's house, which is a cool looking gate. You got some royal family symbol going on that. And suddenly a crow steals our key.
Takuri, Chris, please.
I know. At this point, I'm just doing it to piss you off.
I'm not sure why they included this, because it's like, it's a very brief segment, and it, like, it happens at such an inopportune moment that it's a little frustrating, but it doesn't last that. It's just so strange.
Yeah, the Takuri takes our key and lands on a tree, and at this point in my notes, I've started to call the Pegasus boots Peggy boots, which I think I'm just going to call them for the rest of the show, the Peggy boots.
Chris, I'd be careful if I were you, because that's like once, like, I'm going to have to bleep this, because that is one step away from that. I'm really not into that.
Okay. Let's not.
Chris.
Anyway, so we put our Peggy boots on and have fun editing, and smash into the tree, shaking loose the key and allowing us to go behind the gate.
Yeah, no, and it's around this time, like, where you no longer need the lantern because you no longer have cover of the woods, I guess?
Yeah, I guess the implication is that the graveyard proper is more lit up. I don't really see how, considering you have a whole house filled with lights.
Honestly, I think it might honestly just be like you're outside of the range of whatever darkness spell is on the woods.
Oh, you know what? I'm looking at the area and they specifically have placed a bunch of torches on the ground.
Or there's a bunch of torches on the ground.
Anyway, we can scratch the usual itch of pushing the tombstones of all of the graves in the graveyard.
You kind of have to, right?
I mean, if you've played Zelda games, you kind of do, yeah.
Well, there are some games, though, where you really don't want to, because, like, you'll push a gravestone, and if there's not a secret, you'll spawn either a Genie or a Poe,
mm-hmm.
and then, like, you'll end up having, like, 20 chasing you around, and that's no fun.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen here. Here, you can find a heart piece in one of them, and there might be a few little things, but nothing too spectacular. Essentially, what we want to do here is some three-boy cloning. Some triclones. I like that.
Triclone is good. I like triclone a lot more than, what was it?
Three boy cloning. Anyway, we clone ourselves a few times and we hit some conspicuously placed switches that are right in front of Gustav's massive gravestone.
Huge. Like, there's got to be a, like, his entire life story written there.
Probably. I don't have any notes for if there is something actually written on the gravestone. I don't think there is.
Not that I can recall. I just want to point out, though, this is just the grave of one king.
And we're about to get into it. It's ridiculous what's underneath this grave once this thing moves. It's insane.
The stuff that's hit, we'll get into it.
Okay, so we're going to hit these switches. It's going to move the tombstone, and we are going to descend into the royal crypt.
Classic NES dungeon music.
I love it. That's what I have a note on. It's this cool variation on the original Legend of Zelda dungeon music.
Super cool.
You know what's a little bit less cool? The Gyarados down here.
Oh, we're going straight to Gyarados. Yeah, no, I thought you were going to start with the traps and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay, let's just get into it. We're going to talk about the enemies in the Royal Crypt, but the first things you see are Gyarados, which I'm not knocking Gyarados. I think Gyarados are largely pretty cool, these mummy-like enemies.
Yeah, they're kind of underplayed in the franchise, to be honest.
But the idea of Gyarados in the Minish Cap specifically is that you take down a Gyarados and you get a special item that they're holding.
Are you saying Gyarados?
Gyarados.
I think it's just Gyarados, isn't it?
Oh, the plural of Gyarados is Gyarados. Gyarados. Okay, sorry. Gyarados. but I just want to share a picture with you to reemphasize how nerdy the Gyarados are in the Minish Cap.
Nerdy is the word you're going for?
Yeah, they're holding the item, but they use the same sprite as Link's inventory.
Oh.
Down to the numbers from the inventory.
That is a little weird, because here's the thing. There's no other way to show that on such like a simplified art style. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, not at all. I get it. You need to reuse assets sometimes in video game design. I am not knocking them for doing that.
What Chris is referring to, sometimes in this dungeon or maybe elsewhere in the game too, you can see a Gyarados carrying an item. Sometimes it's like a key for the dungeon you're in. But there's also a picture here of one holding on to a bomb, or I guess a cluster of bombs with a little number 5 on it.
Uh-huh. So it just looks like this guy is wearing a sports jersey of a bomb and a number 5, essentially.
So in universe, in the kayfabe, is this Gyarados holding on to all of them at once, like loose, like cradling them in its arms, or is it like strapped to it?
I've got to imagine that the in-universe explanation is that you're not seeing the item there at all.
Ooh.
And that is just for the player to know what each character has, because that would be a very silly thing to see in universe.
I mean, if it comes to that, like, there's at least one in here that is holding a key, and I think it's like in the same room as one that is not holding a key, so like you know which one to target, right?
Yes.
So then, like, why not just have it where you don't see the item at all, and that way you just have to kill all the Gyarados you see?
Yeah, lock the door until you take down the Gyarados.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I like the idea of? You give the Gyarados some trendy little backpacks. Just imply that there's an item there.
Yeah, I guess that's one possibility. I have a lot of questions about this place. Not so many vis-a-vis Gyarados, because like Vati summoned the Gyarados, gave the key to the Gyarados, right? That's pretty easy to figure out. It's not a huge leap.
Sure.
But really quick, just to mention, because you can see Gyarados in different Zelda games that have different designs and different functions. These are just big old spongy mummies.
Yeah, I love it. They look like Fall Guys.
Oh, they do look like Fall Guys. But in any case, on one hand, they're big and beefy and they'll absorb your damage.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you hit them with your sword, they won't be stunned or pushed back. They'll keep coming forward, which I think is pretty cool. But that could be like a little bit daunting. On the other hand, I'm very glad that these are not the kind of Gyarados that scream and paralyze you.
Yeah, it's never fun to be paralyzed in these games.
Yeah,
I feel like a topic that comes up every time we talk about electricity in these games.
Yeah, no, yeah, definitely. One last thing, though, is that if you use the flame lantern against a Gyarados, all their like mummy bandages will burn off and they'll just have a Stalfos underneath.
Does this imply...
Oh, boy. Uh-oh.
Does this imply that someone wrapped up the magma?
Maybe, because like it depends on which theory we're talking about now, because we're like 5 deep as far as the magma go.
We've made too many theories. We need to finish this season. We need a wiki page of all the dumb theories that we're making at this point.
Now that would be fun. I'd like to see that. But I'm not so sure as far as the Gyarados go, because like I kind of gave myself an out with one of my previous theories of like Malice just like takes bits and pieces of monsters and reconfigures them for different purposes.
Sure.
So, you know, I could, you know, get some wiggle room there. That could work. It could not work.
Yeah, but one thing is for sure. It is very cool to attack one enemy and see it turn into another enemy.
Oh, yeah.
We have a few other enemies in here. most of which we've seen before. We have the blue stalfos, the face lamps, the traps, and the ropes. But we have one new trap that I'm very excited about. Door mimics.
Door mimic. That's the canon name?
Yeah, that's what it says on this wiki page that I'm looking at, so I guess...
Okay, fair enough.
I love mimics. I am a sucker for a good mimic.
A mimic's got a bite, in my opinion.
A good mimic should bite.
A mimic should be a creature, not like, you know, just a trapped door.
So let's explain these door mimics. There's a room coming up here where there are three doors and you have one small key. The left and the right one will, Wile E. Coyote style, just fall on Link.
On a chain, too, so that it'll come back up when it's done crushing you.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Do you think that this is...
The most evil trap in history? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, like, what's the intention here, really? Is it to literally squash to death people who are trying to get into the royal crypt?
Grave robbers, yeah.
I mean, you don't see any remnants of other creatures on the ground here.
No, because they jumped up as Gibdos and Stalfos.
Oh, I gotcha. They are a jumpy bunch, huh?
I think these are just terrifying, terrible things that I don't like to see in these games.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm very jumpy. I like to be able to trust doors in a game like this.
I do like, though, that in the typical mimic fashion, you learn to identify and trust that a certain thing will behave a certain way,
uh-huh.
And then suddenly it doesn't, right?
Yeah.
So it is hitting that note.
I mean, that's the whole point, really. Here's the thing, though, and this is like a little bit, you know, I don't know if it counts as gamey-wamey. You can never find a trap door going sideways.
Okay.
Or coming from the south.
Absolutely. I mean, to be fair, I think these are the only trap doors in this whole game, if I remember correctly.
Incorrect.
Oh. You came prepared for this episode.
Yep. I remember this from elsewhere in the game later on.
So I guess, yeah, I think that's a good enough tell then. But yeah, this is one of multiple puzzles, as you implied. A strange amount of puzzles leading to this person's grave.
The only puzzle that I have really had any sort of problem with in this dungeon was... How to describe this? It was a long rotating platform situation where you have to multiply into two sets of Tetris boys,
mm-hmm.
and like one on one side and two on the other side. And you have to navigate where they're standing in between so that you can step on switches at the end of the path. And like, so you have to constantly move left and right back and forth to avoid any of your clone boys phasing through a surface.
Right.
Chris, I hated this so much.
Yeah, I've got no good clone puzzles in this episode to speak of, so I'm not going to defend it.
I think there was only one clone puzzle in this game that I enjoyed.
Which one is that?
It was one we talked about previously. I think it was in the Fortress of Winds.
Oh, okay. Yes, I think I know exactly which one you were talking about.
Yeah, where you just have to navigate through a narrow passageway and like figure out where things land. That's a lot easier for my little lizard brain to figure out.
Yeah. Hey, to each their own. I get it. I'm not going to make the case for clone puzzles. One thing I will make the case for, though, is these statues leading up to the royal grave. Look at these cool things.
Oh, looks like Zool from Ghostbusters.
It does look like Zool holding a Triforce. Something else it looks like, though, and I am afraid to speak these words in a Zelda podcast. Looks like the Zonai statues in Breath of the Wild.
No, does it?
Uh-huh. The Zonai specifically have these dragon head-shaped statues in their areas of Breath of the Wild.
I have to go back and look at those because I'm not so sure.
I don't know. I think that these kind of fit the bill. Look, I'm not saying that the Zonai are in the Minish Cap, but what if the Zonai are in the Minish Cap?
They're everywhere.
I think we need a Zeltic video explaining it away. Otherwise, I'm convinced these are Zonai.
I'm ready for another 5-hour Zeltic video.
But yeah, do you have anything else about the Royal Crypt before we make our way to the final portion of it?
No, forge ahead. I'm ready.
Okay, so we make our way to the north of the final room. Like you mentioned, there are these two cloning puzzles that are pretty unremarkable, but then there is another tombstone in this room. So you've got a tombstone within a tombstone, Tombception.
Mm-hmm. This is part two of his life story.
Tombstone.
For more info on Gustav's life, venture within.
Uh-huh. We walk up to it and we are presented with Gustav. The ghost of Gustav once again.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Gustav.
Says, "Oh, young one, child who seeks to rescue my descendant Zelda, welcome. My name is Gustav. I was king of Hyrule countless ages ago. I grant you this kinstone. Seek the source of the flow in Hyrule.
Hey, kid, want to trade pogs?
Only then will your path open. Save Zelda. All of Hyrule is counting on you. And he gives you a golden kinstone piece. I'm glad you made that joke there because I think it is absolutely wild that a king from generations ago is up to date with the latest craze in Hyrule.
It's absurd. Okay, so here's the thing. I was under the impression that kinstones were a new trend in Hyrule, right? Like it's the latest thing.
Yeah.
But we do know that Pickory slash Minish disappear, reappear every 100 years. Is it 100 or 1,000?
100 years.
Every 100 years. What if like every time they show up, they just, you know, push the hurdy-gurdy man back out to peddle his kinstones?
Oh, so
yeah, like
kinstones are ageless.
Yeah, like this is a leftover kinstone from back from the last time they were popular.
I mean, I like that better than, you know, the weird vibe I got where you could potentially have the dead king of Hyrule talking to Link about the latest season of Stranger Things.
And how... Yeah, no, you're not going to encounter the ghost of Abraham Lincoln and he wants to trade Yu-Gi-Oh cards with you. I don't think that's going to be happening.
But yeah, I don't know. I guess kinstones should be these ageless things. It's just they never pop up again in other games, do they?
It's just an off year. They're not popular that year.
It would be cool if like a single kinstone piece can be found in a later game, like Breath of the Wild 2. It's like a relic, an ancient relic that maybe has no purpose that you can pick up at some point.
Or even just like you go to like, it's like an Easter egg. You go to someone's room and you see one on their desk.
Exactly. Like the Tingle doll in Skyward Sword.
Yeah. Oh, I loved that so much.
So yeah, this is, you know, he gives us the kinstone piece and we're off to find this source of the flow in Hyrule, which I assume we'll talk about next episode.
Yeah. The description source of the flow is less than helpful, but thankfully like we kind of already know where we're headed because it's like one of the last unchecked locations remaining on the map.
Yeah, I think you'll probably even get a X or something on the map at this point to tell you
that's fair.
It's here.
By the way, Chris, before this point, every single time I got a yellow kinstone piece, I brought it to this source of the flow because I encountered that spot before anything else in the game, or before a lot of other points at least.
Oh, interesting.
So you might be wondering, hey, Pete, when we went to Caster Wilds, every time you got a yellow kinstone piece, did you then run back to this location to try it there? Yes, I did.
That sounds like a lot of wasted effort.
Yeah, it was. But like, that's just what happens because I encountered that spot first. So I wasn't considering there would be some receptacles there in Caster Wilds, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Did not do that, but I would have some angry notes if I did. Anyway, though, that's going to wrap us up for the Royal Crypt and the Royal Valley. Do we want to go?
We actually walked past a couple things here and in the graveyard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's two NPCs that you meet here that I just really briefly want to bring up. They're both genies, you know, ghosts and whatnot. Makes sense. First, hanging around outside, you have Spectre, which is the brother of Spookter, the prankster ghost that hangs out in Hyrule Town.
Uh-huh.
Spectre actually expresses concern that Spookter wandered off. Brothers living apart from each other, etc. You perform a kinstone fusion with Spectre, and Spookter will pass on to the next life.
Yeah.
So, hey, how worried were you about your brother? Because he's gone forever now. Is this the result that you wanted?
He says a weight has been lifted off his shoulder. And he made up for all of his awful deeds. So essentially, you giving the kinstone kind of like recuses him.
Is the idea that like the good luck that Spectre received is that his brother gets to go to Triforce Heaven? Is that what this is?
Yeah, he says, see you in paradise as he disappears. So it's like some Valhalla for the Hyrule ghosts.
I have so many questions. Because aren't genie just straight up ghosts? Because, like, they're monsters, though, right?
Is a ghost a monster? Yeah, a ghost can be a monster, right?
Or is it a ghost of a monster? Is it a ghost that became a monster?
Well, let's talk about the design of these genies specifically. They're wearing, like, a beanie, and they have, like, scruffy hair underneath it.
Yeah, they got like, ski hats.
They also have two eyes, which is not a common thing for the genie.
They do have two eyes. So they're just ghosts?
These feel like people who made have passed on in Hyrule.
Oh, that's just a straight up ghost.
Yeah, they're not Genie, maybe.
Okay. Well, in any case, there is one other Genie that I do know is a Genie. That is Gina, who hangs out in some, you know, forgotten crypt down below the earth.
This is the one that opens up when you fuse Kinstones with Dompe, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Pink Genie. Looks like Miss Pac-Man to some extent.
So I can piece that one together. Dompe lives alone. Gina also lives alone, gets kind of lonely. So like you give good luck to Dompe, they like has a friend.
Yeah, sure.
Makes sense to me. But in any case, Gina is a Genie, likes to trade Kinstones, will trade like 2 to 3 times with you, I think. That's more or less her entire role in the game.
Yes. Trading with Gina does a few things. I think it opens up a cave under a waterfall in Hyrule Town with some treasure.
I think both times that you trade with her, you just get like blue shells. You get mysterious shells.
Mmm. Love traversing across the map to a new opened up location just to get some mysterious shells.
Especially if you, you know, have a full wallet and it just disappears.
Uh-huh.
But here's the thing, Chris. The reason I want to bring up Gina more than anything, what exactly does it take for a monster in the Zelda universe to become just a chill person?
To become a chill person? This is by far the most complicated question you've ever asked me on
okay,
this
okay, okay. 'Cause look at Gina. Hangs out, puts on a bow, if I recall correctly, is lonely, wants to hang out with people, doesn't hang around with monsters as far as I can tell. Then later on, there's another like little mini quest where Percy's locked out of his house by a monster that took over his home. At first you think it's an old lady, but it's actually just a moblin who is posing as an old lady to just, I guess, squat on Percy's house.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go back to Skyward Sword. What was his name? I can't remember his name.
Who are you talking about?
We talked about him earlier this episode.
Betro.
He is a monster and he doesn't want to be a monster. He wants to be a person, right?
So we have this idea of malice that has kind of created an evilness across these creatures, right? And maybe it's just a matter of willpower against the malice, right? Like how much will do they have?
How much leftover personality is there?
How hollow have they gone from the malice?
See, now that on one hand does play into my theory of malice being John Carpenter's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm also wondering, what is the through line here between these monsters where like they can actually trade in their powers, their monster powers, Meowth-like, for the power of speech? Or is it just like a fluke? Is it like an oversight of the mouth? I have so many questions and I find it very interesting. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's gotta be the humanity that they have left. That's, I mean, maybe not humanity, but whatever, their sense of being.
They're leftover moblinanity.
Moblinanity. That is kind of fighting back the overwhelming malice that turns them into brainless creatures that attack.
I know that.
Although, no, to be fair, I always think back to those cyberpunk Bokoblin in Skyward Sword.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just thinking, you know what? No, they all have societies. They can all think. They're all sentient enough. They're able to accomplish.
Or had societies and then were absorbed by malice.
Uh-huh.
Bokoblins and moblins and Lazalfos were people before. Honestly, like, I know this, I'm harping on a lot, but when Breath of the Wild 2 comes out and it's we run into the Zalfos that are just people, I will be so vindicated by all of my ranting.
All right. Well, we've kind of stumbled our way into a Kinstone corner, but before we get too much deeper into our respective corners, do we want to go through some Hello Hyrule travel recommendations for the Royal Crypt and the Royal Valley?
I think I would actually like to have the Hyrule business highlight before that point. The reason being, my attraction is coming from the business we're about to visit.
Sounds good. So let's keep going with our Kinstone Corner. We've got a few quick, interesting Kinstone quests. I think Pete already touched on some of the cool ones with the ghosts. We should go back to the Minish Elder Gentari at this point and fuse Kinstones. Once we do this, we're going to see another Minish nearby who had the thought, you know what would be great? A bomb that went off exactly when you want it to. And I'm just thinking, when I see this, we need to really keep a running tally of people who should go behind bars in the Minish Cap, because there are some very violent individuals.
The inventor of the remote bomb was a Minish.
Yeah.
Just keep that in mind, everybody.
So yeah, we get remote bombs from this Minish. It's another situation of you talk to this Minish to toggle if Link has the ability for remote bombs or standard bombs. I can't see any reason why you wouldn't have remote bombs here on out, though.
I guess if you wanted to blow up multiple spots at once, like it's a combat thing, you know?
I guess, but I don't know that you ever need that.
Yeah, it's kind of...
It's just a preference.
Yeah, it's kind of unreliable that way. Like having just one remote bomb at a time is good,
mm-hmm.
which I think applies also to Binding of Isaac, right? Like you have the equivalent in that where you can just get just one remote bomb at a time. That's still, I think, better.
There's another Minish in a tiny hole in the Wind Ruins who we confuse Kinstones with after the Fortress of Winds that causes a large beanstalk to come out of the ground.
Ooh, have we talked about the beanstalks yet?
I don't think so, but this is a whole big spectacle.
Uh-huh.
And the beanstalk goes all the way up into the clouds, which you gotta love that imagery with the Minish Cap specifically. And you climb up the beanstalk, find yourself in this cloud-like environment, which is amazing, and a little bit of a precursor for things to come, only to get a quiver upgrade.
What do you mean only? I think that's pretty good.
A quiver upgrade in this game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were talking about that, weren't we?
Yeah.
It's... If you're fighting a lot of, you know, stuff that is far away from you, I guess. You know what? I'm going to go back on that because next episode, we're actually going to talk about an upgrade that we're going to get for the bow that I think does make the bow more worthwhile.
Fair enough.
But anyway, really, really quick here. I just want to address something here, Chris. Do you think the beanstalks in this game are also another detail that inspired Skyward Sword?
Oh, well, the whole next area, I think you could make that argument for.
That's fair. I mean, I only bring that up because very early on in season one, I was bringing up like the theory of how Skyward Sword is just like a Jack and the Beanstalk story.
And this game in these moments feels kind of like that as well.
Very real beanstalks in this one. They're not tornadoes.
Yeah. It's a lot more on the nose.
Yeah.
But yeah, the last Kinstone Corner quest that we will talk about here, you tackled the second thing that happens when you fuse Kinstones with Spectre. But the first time you fuse Kinstones with Spectre, it inspires a shopkeeper back in Hyrule Town to try a new great idea that will, quote, add a little more risk to his business in Hyrule Town.
Oh, is that this?
And that will lead us into our Hyrule business highlight, Simon Simulations.
So wait a minute, you're telling me this place was not open until now?
I'm not sure if it... Yeah, no, this place was not open. I think a kid was standing in front of the door.
Okay, I have a couple more questions about this place than I already had.
Let's get to them.
Simon has invented a new game? Question mark?
Mm-hmm.
He calls it a game.
He has a lot of mixed messaging about this game.
You walk in and find a very large bed, and he asks you for 10 rupees.
Oh, before, let's talk about what Simon looks like.
Go on.
He's like a... He looks like he's dressed like a sailor, but he's got the haircut of a little boy.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got the tired eyes of a 45-year-old man.
I don't know what's going on with this guy. I feel like they might have wanted that tired minigame guy from Wind Waker, but couldn't fit him into the pixels.
Ah, you know what? That might be the closest bet.
It might be like a simulacrum of the guy, but that's about it.
Yeah, but I don't know. This guy's getup is odd. He's got like some sort of bandana.
To me, it looks like he tied a sweater around his shoulders, like a preppy.
Could very well be that, yes. But yeah, we walk into his store and it's just... I am reluctant to even call this a store because it's a giant bed. I don't know where Simon was in the previous cutscene where we see him have this revelation about his business, because there mm-hmm. is at least a storefront, I think, in that little cutscene.
Which has a big, goofy, goopy ghost on the roof
mm-hmm.
before he even has his new idea, and it's just a bed. You know, implications aside, Chris, the actual attraction is very strange.
It's puzzling, to say the least, yeah. So basically, he tells you about this simulation where he says, "We allow you to fight grand monsters without any danger." Then, in the same conversation, he says, "This is not for the faint of heart. If you die in the simulation, well, then I don't know. It's never happened.
It's never happened. So either all the customers he has are tougher than you and, you know, have no risk of losing or dying or anything.
Which, like, we've been around Hyrule and that's not the case.
Exact. Or you're his first customer and it's never happened before. And what he doesn't know, Chris, is that if you die in the dream, you die for real.
It is. I am. As someone who has spent 3 years as a QA, the idea that you would have a whole business and have a whole simulation and just offer someone to do it without ever testing all of the scenarios is infuriating.
How do you pitch to somebody that there's no danger when you don't know that there's no danger?
That's what I'm saying. He says all of this in the same dialogue box. It is irresponsible.
And he describes it, first off, that you can be the hero you've always wanted to be. And it's like a dungeon simulation in your dreams. So at first, what I thought happens is that anybody who lies down in that bed has a dream and they face their biggest fears or stuff that they've fought in the past or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, you get dropped in and fight your middle school bullies or whatever the heck. But when you get dropped in, it's always the same allotment of monsters each time.
Yep. Moblin. Keatons and P-hats.
I think that's just three different kinds because there's also whiz robes and I think one other kind of monster in there. It's a mosh pit of monsters, which is pretty cool. First time I was in there, I actually ended with just like a quarter of a heart. That's fine.
Yeah. I think I had a similar experience, which, I mean, makes you feel like a real chump based on Simon's previous speech.
But like when you come back, nothing has changed. So that tells me that everybody who comes in has to fight all the same monsters, the Gibdos, the Wizrobes, etc.
Yep.
No one, you're the first, you have to be the first customer.
You have to be the first customer. I agree. Also, like, for doing this, you get a piece of a heart. And I just don't think that's valuable to other people. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm making assumptions about the lifestyle of the common Hyrule NPC.
I
just don't think they need that as much as they need rupees.
I think anybody would like to have a little bit more HP, right?
Subsequent times you play this, I think you just get rupees or hearts.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It would not surprise me if he gives you mysterious shells.
Like 5 mysterious shells or something silly.
So Simon should be in jail and his, you know, whatever technology or magic he's invented should be confiscated and used for good.
Absolutely. Someone more responsible would do something more interesting with it. Like, almost like a boss rush.
A boss rush would have been cool, actually.
Yeah, boss rush and then make, like, some cool, if only there was a cool shield somewhere in this game that would have been a nice reward at an earlier point in the game.
Actually, oh man, that would have made a lot more sense than what they did.
Okay, if what I'm saying doesn't ring any bells, we'll get to it in a few episodes from now.
I think that'll be the next episode, actually.
So now that we tackle the Hyrule business highlight, though, do you want to talk about some travel recommendations for the episode?
I am ready. So in order, Chris, we're going to go photo op, attraction, and best bite.
All right. So our photo op, our scenic location that we would like to get a picture taken in front of in the Royal Valley or the Royal Grave.
Royal Crypt.
For me, personally, it's going to be in between the two Zonai statues right in front of Gustav's ghost in the Royal Crypt.
Ooh, that is pretty good, actually. That's a good selfie spot.
What about you? What's your best photo op?
I was going to probably say, like, outside of the crypt, like, up on that ridge by the gigantic tombstone.
Oh, for sure.
Like, you get a good, like, scenic shot out towards, like, the rest of Hyrule.
Yeah, and you got those torches there. It's the biggest tombstone you'll ever find. Yeah, that's a good shot.
What about your recommended attraction?
Recommended attraction, which is where we take one of the areas in the episode and make it, spruce it up, make it a little fun. Or maybe it's fun enough as it is. For me, it's got to be Dompei's weird haunted cabin.
His weird cabin.
It's been one of those episodes. Yeah, I don't know. I love the idea of like a haunted house in the middle of these spooky woods.
Yeah.
Totally has the vibe going for
that's
it.
That's a good idea. Like, if you, especially if you can incorporate Dompei into the place.
Yeah, let him run the place. He deserves some extra rupees for a side business.
He might not enjoy the attention.
He might not. Yeah, let him be behind the scenes managing the books. books and have one of the little ghost friends.
Oh, Gina. Yeah, we established that they hang out now.
There you go. Gina can take care of the door. What about you? What's your alluring attraction?
I'm thinking it is Simon's lucid dream bed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, once Simon's in jail, mind you. Like, you can, start up a different business here. You can come in, pay whatever amount, and you sleep in this bed, and you can automatically have lucid dreams in which you are in control.
I mean, who wouldn't like it if every dream was a lucid dream?
Right? It is, there's a lot of potential there for, like, not only entertainment, but maybe even to do some good, you know?
For sure.
And not just stick, you know, strangers into a meat grinder in which they might actually die.
Or even better yet, what if you treat this bed like the beds in the new Animal Crossing game, and Link can visit all the other Links in like a safe otherworldly instance of their own Hyrule.
Oh, I have a lot of questions now. There's a lot of questions here, Chris. Are you talking about like a bunch of multiverse of different Minish Cap Links or all the Links from all the games?
All of the Links from all the games.
Oh boy, that is a challenging concept.
All right, well, I don't mean to crack that open at the tail end of this episode here. Do we want to move on to Best Bites?
I'm ready for that.
Best Bites, which is where we rank the tastiest treat throughout the locations discussed in the episode. For me, it's got to be grilled takuri burgers.
Ooh, you know, I was just going to say roasted takuri, but that I like the idea of turning into a burger. That sounds nice.
Yeah, you got that. It's like, some people like duck meat. It's essentially that.
You got to work it though, right? Because like a crow is very, it's like gamey, isn't it? That's a tough bird.
Wait, have you eaten crow before?
No, but I've eaten duck.
Yeah, I guess duck is a bit more gamey.
I mean, honestly though, could be good.
Could be good.
And it's also better than saying I'd eat a ghost.
Definitely better than saying I'd eat a ghost. And I am glad that your thing does not involve, once again, talking about the taste of Link and Ezlo.
It's their spiritual energy, Chris. It's different.
Anyway, I guess that's going to wrap us up for the travel recommendations. Pete, do you want to take a very quick trip to the post office?
I'm ready, yeah.
Yeah!
So the one thing we have this episode from the post office is an audio postcard. I think our first audio postcard.
Wait, really?
Or at least the first one in a while. From friend of the show and listener Alex Wilkie, who reached out on Facebook.
Wait, really?
Yeah. He listened to our Lake Hylia episode and made me aware that we may have missed a little bit of dialogue from Link as he entered the Temple of Droplets. We got so caught up in our uwu speech that we missed some very important audio dialogue.
What is it?
Thankfully, Alex has the audio clipped here for us.
What?
I'm Link. I'm the hero. And I can fit inside the Temple of Droplets because I can go small like a little baby.
Some dialogue from Link that we seem to have just completely forgotten about somehow.
Why did he send you that?
I am very glad that we have cultivated a small community of people such as Alex who are comfortable enough with our sense of humor and share a similar sense of humor in that way. Thank you, Alex, for sending that postcard in. So Pete, where are we going next episode?
Oh, well, next time we are going to be visiting Vale Falls and the Cloud Tops, Chris.
Ooh, here it is.
We're going back
to some good stuff.
We're going back to Skyrule.
And hope we're going back to Skyrule. Cannot wait. I've been very nostalgic for Skyrule. Actually, I think I'm going to play Skyward Sword again at some point in the near future. Kind of miss it.
Yeah.
It's become kind of a weird warm blanket for
me. It's kind of, you know, it's weird. I've been thinking about that too. I've been like busting my buns to beat Xenoblade Chronicles 1 before 3 comes out, and like as it's been going on, I've been I pass by the physical copy of the new Skyward Sword that you got me, and I'm itching to get back and be mad at Fledge and do all those other things.
I think that would be a really good cold cut for the Xenoblade sandwich that you're getting yourself into.
I'm not sure, because like I do genuinely need to start 4 Swords soon.
That's true. That reminds me, I'm spending way too much time playing Breath of the Wild. I also need to start Four Swords soon.
Time's a ticking. We got to jump into that. In any case, if you have an opinion on what Link's soul tastes like, you can send us a postcard in one of two ways. Either drop us an email over at HyrulePod@gmail.com or a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, ratings and reviews help make this podcast more visible. And, you know, even if you don't have Apple Podcasts, you could just tell a friend. If you know a friend who likes The Legend of Zelda and you think they might enjoy this podcast, word of mouth means the world to us.
Hey, you want to do us a flavor? Tell your friends. You can also find the show on social over at HyrulePod on Twitter, Tumblr, and Insta. You can find me and Chris individually on Twitter. I am at the edge of my Pete.
And I am at a man named Babs, B-A-B-S.
That's going to do it for this episode of Hello Hyrule. Thank you for listening. Until then, I've been Pete.
And I've been Chris.
Excuse me, podcast.
I'm Wink. I'm the hero. And I can fit inside the Temple of Droplets because I can go small like a little baby.